Comics General. He's back again.
We've got one return guest and two new guests. I'm going to let our return guest say hello. How you doing, buddy?
Hey!
It's Elliot. And who do you got with you here, man?
I'm here with Nick Kratzis.
Hi.
And my wife, Christine Frank.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
So the reason for this episode is really cool, I gotta say. You guys are opening a comic book shop. Comic book and games, right?
That is accurate.
Yep. What's this place called? Super, or what's it going to be called? I'm sorry.
Superscript Comics and Games.
Awesome. I guess where I'd like to start is for each of you, where do comics come into play for you? Where does it start for you guys?
Like, when did I first become, or
yeah,
first
what, become when did it become a thing that you were like, oh, okay, I kind of love this?
Yeah, that's a tricky question for me. I think it was, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I have all of the answers I wish were, like, the real answer to that question. And then, like, so I probably first got into, like, really reading comics in, when Image first became a thing.
Yeah.
I had comics before that, but that was when I like started following stuff and became like aware of like writers and artists.
Yeah,
you know,
actively following stuff.
Grew up in the 90s, so you know, like Spawn was a thing.
Oh yeah,
but I would say that it wasn't until like Nick and I were probably in about middle school when we started going to Mid Ohio Con in Columbus every year.
Okay.
For a while, or was that earlier than that?
No, I think middle school would be about the time, like late 90s. Yeah.
And that was like, you know, when a ton of like interesting stuff was happening. So like, you know, Michael J. Straczynski was coming out with new books, and Jay Lee, and like all those people that, you know, kind of were formative in getting into books. But also that was like when Vertigo was doing a ton of cool stuff.
Right, yeah.
Like, I was probably just on the cusp of the age where I was able to, like, appreciate that. And also, hanging out at the local comic book store that Nick and I both kind of grew up at, Ground Zero Comics in Strongsville, Ohio, was, like, that kind of became, like, our home base for, you know, our group of miscreant, you know, middle school kids hanging out would be... That was the... I wonder what we're doing today. Well, I'm sure if I like end up at the comic shop,
something will happen.
Other people will be there and we'll figure it out. So like a lot of like formative friendships are also probably tied up in that. Christine, Nick, either of you guys want to
go ahead, Nick?
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, my experience was, yeah, like for me similar, obviously. 'Cause yeah, we like, that comic book shop was across the street from the middle school we went to.
So oh, that's perfect. Yeah. You can't beat that.
Right. And it was, like Elliot said, like you'd just kind of go up there and people would be doing something and that would be your day.
That's a very familiar experience.
Yeah. And so I guess for me it was like... It took a while for me to follow any comics strictly or regularly, I guess. It was more of just going to the store and finding interest in all the different things happening.
Yeah. Like, the atmosphere and the experience and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd say I have kind of a different path, I guess. I grew up in a different town, not in the greater Cleveland area, like these folks. So small town. And, you know, as a kid, my dad and I would, well, my dad wasn't a kid. I was a kid.
appreciate the distinction.
Yeah, no problem. That sentence was weird.
Small towns, you know, everyone's family's different.
Exactly. So he would read Calvin and Hobbes with me.
Oh, I
read a lot of comic strips. Probably one of his worst memories and my best was the time I did not want to eat chicken pot pie, so he had to bribe me to take bites with Far Side comics.
That's fair. I would have
read one
that.
Comic, and I would take a bite of chicken pot pie, and we did that for like an hour. And now that I think back to, you know, or think as an adult, like how precious my evening time is.
Yeah.
Like thinking about my dad just sitting there for an hour trying to force me to eat just sounds like torture.
Can now I? Now when you read The Far Side, do you still eat pot pies while doing so?
Do I think about the taste of chicken pot pie? No. I've been able to scrub the chicken pot pie from the Far Side.
I've read that experience. Yeah, you can separate the pot pie from the Far Side. I like that.
Can I say, did he describe the panel to you as well? Like, Far Side is such a visual comic strip.
It's very subtle.
So, like, I love the idea of him reading that to you. Just like, yeah.
Well, I was young enough that...
two cows standing. One of them is holding a shotgun.
I was young enough. He had a book, and I was young enough to not be able to read, so we would be looking at it together, and then he would read the words that were there that I could not read.
Although that's a whole podcast right there. It's just a grown adult explaining Far Side to a child who's not actually looking at the comic.
I subscribe already. I'll listen to that.
And then from there, you know, we had books of Garfield comic strips for me to read. As far as true comic books, as a kid, I watched all the shows.
Yeah.
Batman, even the 60s Batman, because there weren't that many cartoons back in the day. So
yeah,
Batman
Super
would
Friends
be on.
And stuff like
so
that, yeah.
The Batman, X-Men, I watched all of those. And then kind of diverged, read a lot of fictions, and you know, thinking back, my interests in books, really, I could have so easily gotten into serialized comics as a little girl, but instead I channeled that into being into mystery series.
Okay.
So I read tons and tons of, like, you know, one after the other, Boxcar Children mystery series. And
yeah.
So it was not until adulthood that I was introduced to, oh, here's Batman that you knew, and you love mysteries. So,
yeah. You're like, he's
wow,
a detective.
It's all in one place. And so that it was kind of in adulthood where I came to comic books.
That's awesome.
But storied history of comics in my past.
Do you guys have a particular book or series that kind of cements that love, or like something that you recommend to people who maybe don't read comics or want to get into comics?
Oh man, that's a really good question, but I feel like that's two questions, because I feel like,
yeah, that's fair.
Like, the stuff I really love and have gravitated towards is not the stuff I would recommend to like everybody, because like the thing that did it for me, like, you know, like, was probably like Transmetropolitan by Warren Ellison. Like, that is not a, like, here's your first comic sort of book. But it, like, I think for me, I just kind of find a lot of joy in, like, when I encounter someone who's new to comics, who has a interest of being able to, like, be kind of like a diagnostician of, like, what they're gonna like based on, like, what other thing, like, okay, so, like,
that's
what,
my favorite, yeah,
yeah, like, what here. Books do you read, what movies do you watch, and being able to, like, have the ability to be like, okay, there's absolutely
a
book,
boil
for
those
you.
Tastes down to, like, an essence,
yeah,
almost.
Because, like, I think with when Christine and I first moved in together, you know, and, like, we have this whole shelf of comics or whatever that I had, and, like, at some point, I don't remember exactly how this came up, but you were, like, looking for a recommendation or whatever, and I knew you liked mysteries, and it was just like, oh, well, Long Halloween.
Yes.
Like,
perfect.
Because it's, like, such a pulp mystery, and you don't have to have, like, if you understand the general beats of what Batman is, like, you can jump right in, and, like, you liked that book, and I remember that was just, like, a super gratifying feeling that, like, even to another adult and a peer being able to be like, you might enjoy this. And
yeah, I liked that book. And then we went to our local comic book shop after that, and I was like, where are more of this? And and we picked up several other books to fulfill that interest. But then you also had me read Bone, which I really, really loved.
That actually is probably, like, the right answer to Josh's question. Is like,
I think that should be everyone's answer to that question, because, like, that's a hallmark.
I definitely agree with all of that. But one that I have, a book that I love and that I have given to people that probably haven't read comics before is the graphic novel Stitches by David Small.
I'm not familiar.
It's just super sad and this terrible autobiographical story, but it's like so beautifully done, and it is so like subtle and particular in the way that it tells its story. And
that's not Nick, by the way. It's Elliot's dog, Riker, drinking some water. Don't worry. So
thirsty right now.
I'm sorry, Nick. You were saying. Okay.
He didn't drop the bone ball drink.
That was impressive. But no, that book is I feel like it does everything that I want a comic book to do in like a very compact way, I guess.
That's a great
like as I said, I've given that book to people that I probably haven't read a comic before.
Yeah.
And I feel like that could give them a good example of like, oh, this is what a comic can be.
Yeah.
Like to kind of piggyback off of that too, I think that's like a really interesting thing about like comics now, like in the wake of like the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe and everything. Like people, even people who have not read comics, like those movies have done incredibly well. So you can kind of assume that people have like a familiarity or like a point to jump in on with like mainstream comics from like
some sort of a point of reference.
So like I don't need to recommend Captain Marvel to someone because they're gonna like it's in the zeitgeist, you know, like,
right?
It's
more,
or like Iron Man books or Spider-Man books, like those things are known quantities.
Not to mention too, you can look those characters up on Google and you'll find 100 different lists saying, you know, here's your the best versions of these stories or the best versions of this character and so on and so forth too.
So to Nick's point, I think like what's really fun about being involved with selling comics now is the idea of like, okay, you are kind of trying to find things to recommend that show people that comics can do things they personally were not aware of prior. Because for the success of all those Marvel's movies, they've kind of doubled down on the same formula that Marvel events and DC events have had for years, which is just, we're going to make them hyper complex and we're going to have all these crossovers and these characters and showing up in each other's movies and stuff. And so like, there's less of like, I think if you had asked me that question like 2 decades ago, it would have been like when we were like working in comic shops or whatever, it would have been like, well, it would be trying to find the way to onboard them to like a book that wasn't going to require them to have an encyclopedic knowledge of something.
Yeah.
And now that's like, listen, like the internet exists, all those movies exist. If you want to get into Marvel or DC, like this writer is currently good who is writing this. If you like that character, I recommend reading it now because, you know, Di Cates is writing it or whatever.
I like to be able to recommend, so we talked about just a moment ago, comic books being able to do things that you wouldn't expect, but I look at it as more, I like to recommend stuff that comic books have started doing, you know, things that traditionally they haven't done. So I referenced the, new Ms. Marvel. So I think that's a great story. You know, not only does it have representation that you don't normally get in a comic book, but they do a good job of like representing what a teenager would be thinking if they suddenly got these powers and the struggle of like pleasing your parents. And, you know, it's almost, I think of it like a Spider-Man story almost, because Spider-Man at the very beginning, Peter Parker's just this teenager regular guy, and but it's like modern, it's told from a girl's point of view, it's told from a point of view you don't normally hear. So I recommend that book around just because it's like not something that comic books have been doing and might surprise people to hear that, oh, there are other points of view being represented.
And I think that's the great, one of my favorite things about comics too, is like even going back to, you know, 1960 and Spider-Man, like I feel like comics have had a way better track record of inclusion, even though it's obviously taken, not that we're at any final point or anything, but I feel like comics have always been a little bit ahead of the curve than like movies or television. And like even back then, like you didn't get stories from a kid. Nobody cared what a kid thought.
Yeah.
I mean, so as simple as it was, even though it was this nerdy white kid, and you're like, well, that's not really representation, but like nobody gave a shit what a kid thought in 1960. And like from there you got, you know, the stuff, you know, all the way up to the stuff we have now with Kamala Khan and comics, I think, are more inclusive and representative than maybe any other kind of media that I can think of, at least.
I would say for pulp, like definitely there's been a push in that direction.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think you could make the case that like genre, like lit, like sci-fi literature,
very true. Yeah,
ahead of comics on that stuff, but
yeah,
that's kind of semantic. Oh, Christine, did you say something?
No, I was going to say that, you know, while Ms. Marvel is told from the teenage point of view, it's still a good read as an adult. Like, it's not cringeworthy. You're
not
sitting there going, oh, this is too juvenile. Like, it manages to evoke that, like, oh, I remember what this was like, without being like,
absolutely,
oh my God, what was I thinking? You know?
Yeah, it doesn't just feel like a grown-up writing a kid,
right,
having it be like, gee golly gosh, out of touch, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah. I was going to say, to your like suggestion, I guess, of Ms. Marvel, like you could think of it also as maybe someone comes into looking for a suggestion from like they have seen a movie, or they've or they're aware of a character that's I guess more broadly popular, and then you're able to give them that, like. And I guess to Josh's point, like, comics have maybe been ahead of the curve and having this representation for a while, but that's not necessarily the stuff that rises to the pop culture.
Of course, yeah.
You know,
yeah, there's a lot of hidden gems.
Yes, exactly.
Sure. Any other point on that one, Elliot?
No, I think that's... I totally forgot what the question we were answering was. It was just turned into a...
Recommendations.
Well, yeah, okay.
Oh, well, like, what do we recommend to people? That's right.
Yeah. Sorry. But yeah, I think... Bone is pretty much universally the answer.
No one listening to this podcast has not read Bone, right?
And if that's, you haven't, impossible, read it, because it's beautiful. Yeah. It's finally going to be animated, too, fingers crossed. It seems like it's really going to actually happen this time. After a good couple decades of Watchmen-esque levels of development hell,
do you want to have a voice for like any of those characters? Like, that's the thing that scares me, is like, I don't know, like, that I can handle.
I feel like if you have to have, I mean, yeah, I feel like you have to go unknowns, or not, maybe not unknowns, I guess is a harsh term, but maybe like someone that, people that aren't necessarily marquee names.
Yeah, like
for the brothers,
Phony Bone already has like a voice in my head, and it will ruin me if it's not what it, you know.
I feel like if you're gonna bring like a marquee name or marquee names into a story like that, you have to. I think you give them to characters like Granny and the Red Dragon,
yes,
and you know Ted the Bug and things like. Give me Seth Rogen as Ted the Bug. That's all I want.
All right, let's cast Bone. So Jane Lynch is Granny, right?
Oh my God, that's perfect. I'm not even going to try and think of another suggestion, because that's really great.
That's all I got.
Short of if you can give me Helen Mirren doing like a harsh Southern accent, I'll take that. But barring that, Jane Lynch, I'm in all day. Okay. Or Joy Behar. Those are my three. what's Granny's boyfriend's name? I'm completely drawing a blank.
I'm not gonna be able to remember.
For that, I would go Nick Offerman.
Okay, I'll take it. I'm with you.
Can Whoopi Goldberg be the dragon?
Sure,
I'm into that.
I mean, like, that's not what would have leapt to mind immediately, but
I also don't think it doesn't. I don't think it's not something that would work. I think it would totally crush. I think she'd be great. Now as the brothers, as the bones.
Did you, probably Patton Oswalt is one of them.
Oh, that would be good.
Or all of them.
Or the
Eddie Murphy-esque.
The buddy cop duo from Lord of the Rings.
John Rhys Davies and Orlando Bloom.
Yes.
So I don't know about anybody else, but in my head, the three brothers, not necessarily attached to any specific... Well, let's see. So Patton, I like. I would keep Patton for mine.
I just like him because I'm sure he's like familiar enough with the source material.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, Patton Oswalt. I feel like Kyle Mooney from Saturday Night Live is a good one. And if I had to pick a third, oh God, I don't even know. I can't think of a good third one. I'm trying to think of like SNL people maybe, or like, I guess we could throw Paul Rudd in there somewhere.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Have to be one of the Bone Brothers, but he's, why not? Put him in everything. Paul Rudd, everything.
I feel like Adi Bryant would be just, I don't care who she is. She needs to be someone.
I don't care who she plays either because she's great.
Yeah.
Well, moving on from that, let's talk a little bit more about the shop. We got a good basis down for, you know, where comics came into play for you guys and what kind of impact they've had on you. Where did the idea come from? Who approached who with the idea for this?
You know, I think it was more organic than that. Like, okay. I think, and this is actually me as a third party almost, but Nick and Elliot have been both together and separately ruminating on starting some sort of business for a long time. So I don't think it
was just a matter of what it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was that and the right time for it.
Okay.
For us, I guess. But yeah, that definitely the idea of starting something like this has been in the back of our heads forever, I feel like, at least for me. But yeah, as far as I think once the time was right, I mean, Elliot approached me. So I don't know if you want to speak to how maybe what made that the right time for you, I guess.
Yeah. So like it's definitely something that we had like talked about in passing years prior. We kind of alluded to it when we were talking about how we got into comics, but Nick and I have known each other since we were about 6 years old, and we've kind of always been involved in some sort of project together. Like we played in bands together and, you know, we grew up together and we've always kind of been working on something together. And like, I think about that a lot actually lately is like, even when Nick and I were like real little kids and we used to play, it was always like in service of making something.
Yeah.
Like even when we would like play with like toy dinosaurs or whatever, we would like film it. And like, because
there was always a goal in mind.
Like, you know, yeah, it was like, you know, like objective oriented in a lot of way. Yeah. Like it was, and so, this thing had been kind of kicked around back and forth, and I had ended up in a point where I'd like recently like resigned a job that I had been working at for a while, and it was like one of those, like, it wasn't bad, like the employer was great, but it was just like there was no path kind of thing, and it was just like, I don't like, you know, you get carried along by the currents of life or whatever, and it was just like trying to think of like, what do I really want to be doing kind of thing. And, you know, like wanting to build something from like the ground up and trying to think of like things outside of just like flights of fancy, just like what are the things that like I always come back to? Like, what are things that I know I can spend? Because, like, this is one thing, just, like, as an aside, like, from Nick and I being in, like, touring punk rock bands together for, like, a decade is, like, it's important that if you're going to do something that's going to take up a ton of your time, that you, like, love it enough that, like, even when it sucks, you can still keep doing it.
You can still find
it,
comfort,
and,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that you love the people you're doing it with enough to be able to, like, keep doing it. And you kind of, like, learn your own threshold for those sort of things. And, like, the thing I realized is that, like, comics and games are kind of that for me. And, like, that took a lot of, like, self-arguing to, like, make sure I wasn't just being this, like, juvenile Peter Pan thing of just,
course,
like, I
yeah.
just want to play with toys and read comics and, like, and, like, make sure, like, no, I really care about this stuff. And it's actually funny, like, you were actually, like, one of the first people, like, before this became a thing that, mm-hmm. like, I think it was actually the first time I was on Comics Generally, like, later that week, I may have texted you. It was just like, would you want to open a comic shop?
I remember having that conversation, like, having this, like, warm flash of, like, yes! And then, look, remembering, yeah. like, oh, hey, man, you don't have money.
And it was just, well, no, it was just like a, talk me out of it. Like, tell me this isn't a good idea. And you didn't. And then, like, later, like, and I brought it up to Nick, and, like, and you weren't on the fence, but you were like, let me think about it. And then, like, at some point, our friend... Oh.
I was on the fence.
It's fair, given the circumstances.
I mean, is that different than thinking about it, or...?
No, that's supposed to...
I suppose that's the same thing. but, and, like, our friend Christian, who's, like, been helping us with our website and stuff, like, he was just like, and I was like, oh, what do you think about opening a comic shop? And, like, just, like, kicking it out there to people who I knew were gonna, like,
would give you their real answer.
And, like, no one talked me out of it. And then, like, you know, talking to Christine about it a ton, like, it would just be this fun thing that Christine and I kicked around, be like, you know, if we did own a comic shop, we could do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, whatever. And those conversations started happening more and more frequently, where it was like, okay, well, when we open this comic book shop, and then it was hanging out with our friend, Bo, where I'd kind of been like, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, like, for months. And, you know, before that, on and off for years, you know, I've been thinking about it, like, and, like, this particular friend is someone who, like, I kind of rely on to talk me out of things.
Sure.
Like, he's very much the guy who, I mean, he's an attorney, so it's like his job to tell you things are a bad idea and to, like, shut up for a living, you know? And he was just like, let me ask you a question. Do you ever have unread comics in your house? And I was just like, I don't understand. He's like, I'm just saying, like, do you ever go buy comics and then, like, get home and then, like, put them somewhere and then not read them? And just like, no,
like, right.
That's not how that works. And he's like, yeah, you'd probably be fine then. And it was like, that was not, like, the rational measured, like, I was expecting him to give me, like, a breakdown of, like, you know, like, cause he is very much the kind of person who would be like, well, here are all of the downsides and stuff to doing this. And at that point, I don't remember, like, a specific, like, lightning bolt moment, but, like, Christine and I had started talking about it with, like, it was a real thing. And then at some point,
I don't know. I think also the timing of it all was pretty important to this, because it was around the end of the year. And so New Year's was coming, and, you know, so I think that is actually kind of significant to it, because we were thinking about goals and thinking long term.
That's and, pretty fair, yeah.
And so I was looking at it of, like, as, okay, what's, and I may have posed this question to Elliot, but I maybe didn't. I don't know. But what's in 10 years, what decision could I make now that in 10 years I would regret not doing,
right,
or be really glad I did. And that was it. I was like, okay, this is that moment where I can make this decision. Well, we can make this decision of, we're going to move forward with this and be serious about it, or we're going to make the decision of, well, we'll never know.
Right.
And
yeah, And then Nick, I can't remember if it was like after a band practice or you called me or whatever, but you were like, you know, I've been thinking about it and I want to do it. And we all got together here at our house and we meet once to twice a week minimum and have been doing so this entire year. But like that first meeting was just very much like talking about what we would want the shop to be.
Sure. Yeah.
And like, that was like, I feel like the moment where the project started, because we were all so closely aligned on what we wanted it to be, even though we hadn't, like, Christine and I had talked about it, Nick and I had talked about it, but like,
there had never been like a group meeting.
Yeah. And like, where we just all kind of like laid it out and we're like, you know, like, before we had actually written a formal mission statement for the company down, it was just like, we had one. We wanted it to be this place that was like, so we talk about it in like our business plan as being like accessible to everyone, regardless of who they are or their level of experience with comics or any particular game. And like that was kind of like where we all kind of solidify, is just like, yeah, this should be the kind of shop that you can walk into if you have like a passing, like you're like, whatever, I saw Daredevil on Netflix and now I'm interested. Or you are like someone who has been reading every major Marvel event for the last two decades or whatever. And that like those things don't need to be mutually exclusive. Like both those customers can shop in the same place. And like those customers are actually the two kinds of customers who can like benefit most from being around one another. And also recreating what we mentioned that like Nick and I kind of had when we were growing up is like that home base, that place where like, you know, weird nerdy kids can just like, you can just exist here and you can be a person and, you know, you can hang out with people that are like you and do things that you like to do and find other people who want to be involved in those activities. And so that first meeting where we were just like, okay, I guess we're doing this, was I think the moment where it really started.
Yeah. I was gonna just add, like, from my perspective, I guess, like, after you first met with me and kind of, I don't know, gave me your pitch, I guess, more or less, of like what you wanted to do with opening a shop. And then I had to think about it, because I was like, well, this is a big thing.
For sure.
But I guess to speak to your point that like when we did come together, it was like, oh, we all kind of have that same vision without having talked about it yet. As I thought about it more, I realized, I can't, like, there's no world in which you guys can open a comic and game store and I cannot be involved in it. Exactly. You know, it was like that.
Coincidentally, that's what
that
I told him.
Will not work. Like, right. You know, so yeah, I obviously have to. Yes.
That's exactly what I go, you realize when this place opens, like, I'm just going to not leave, right?
Right, right.
Like, you're just going to eventually have to hire me because I'm not going to go home. And he was like, I understand.
That's fine.
He's like, I accept this. So from there, how fast does this ball start rolling in terms of prep work and research and you know, was it a process of calling shops or how did you go about doing that, I guess?
So to give some context, we're talking about, I mentioned this was around New Year's. This was New Year's 2019.
Okay.
Where we started, that was the time it was starting to really coalesce.
Sure, yeah.
Then Elliot and I signed up for some start your own business classes at the library.
Okay.
Cuyahoga County Public Library, great library system. They offer really a 6-series course on how to start your own business.
Oh, wow.
And so we went to, I think, the first two of that and learned kind of how to structure a business plan, gave us an outline and some structure to the idea.
Okay.
And then from there, we were meeting with Nick regularly, but we did. We met with a local business owner, Tabletop Board Game Cafe. Nick worked there at one time. And so we met with the owners, or one of the owners, Shiva, and she was really helpful in telling us about her journey to starting a business. And then we realized we were going to need some industry-specific market research. One of the things we learned in the class, you need to do your market research. And so we started calling comic book shops in demographically similar areas of different states.
Sure.
So Michigan, Indiana, Pennsylvania, and then looking for something kind of near a big city, but not quite in downtown, that sort of thing. And each of us had mixed success. But I think Elliot probably has the best story of that journey. So I'll let him tell it. He seems reluctant.
Well, so there's like one other thing that happened like before we started calling businesses, which is we put together like the first thing or the first draft of our financial projections. So like dug out all my like old accounting textbooks from like college and like just like tried to remember how to put together like a P&L and a cash flow statement and like all this stuff. Because
this guy doesn't know how to do a cash flow statement.
I mean, barely still. Like, but it's like noob. We like the first thing was just like trying to figure out how much all this was going to cost. And we put together this thing where we like literally priced out like Christine has this like crazy Rain Man looking like schedule of like how frequently we would need to buy like Windex. Like it's like we went through like beyond just like what inventory is going to cost, like are just, and all of this changed like 100 times. But like we started out by going through and listing like, here's what it's going to cost to start this place up. And then while we were working on that, we started calling businesses like Christine said. And like, I don't know if I have any specific, like, really great story, but it was really interesting how all over the place it was. Like,
yeah. I was curious what the reception was like. I mean,
so talked to a lot of shops that were like, hey, awesome, like, happy to help. And, like, you know, some places were, like, cagey about giving us, like, actual financial numbers. And I understand why someone doesn't necessarily want to do that. But a lot of people were really helpful. And I feel like it kind of falls into, like, three different categories. And I feel like anybody who's shopped at multiple comic book shops will recognize these, like, characters, like, right off the bat. It's, like, there's the, like, there was a lot of, like, well, I'm not the owner. And the owner doesn't come in very more because this shop's been around for 1 million years. And, like, but I can tell you what our diamond order is, or like, I can tell you what we charge for a box of magic boosters. So
you got like the acting managers.
Yeah. And those guys were super helpful, but it was like hard to get a peek behind the curtain with that stuff because they, in a lot of cases, they didn't necessarily know.
Of course.
Yeah. Or the information they did have wasn't relevant to a startup. Cause it's like, we've been the biggest comic shop in this town for as long as there have been comic shops. In
of
this
course.
Town.
Yeah.
And then, the other kind we would get is like the a very doom and gloom, like, why? Like, oof. Because I want to open a comic shop, and because there's not one in the city I live in, and it's like a pretty decent sized inner ring suburb of a major metropolitan area. And it was like, I don't know.
Like, wow.
Okay. And then the third category, and this ended up being more helpful than like, this isn't a category. This is one specific, and I will omit the name, but where it was just like incredibly aggressive right off the bat, where I call this guy up and say, hey, you know, I was looking at your shop online. My name's Elliot. I'm working with my business partners, and we're opening a new comic book shop located in Lakewood, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. And I was just wondering if you had a few minutes to answer a few questions. And like, this person was immediate, like, just started quizzing me. I was like, how much money do you have for startup? And I was just like, well, and he's like, that's not going to be enough. And I'm like, I didn't say a number yet. And it like said the numbers, like, well, maybe. And then he was just like, and the quiz question just kept coming. Like, just, how much do you charge for a booster box of magic? And it's just like,
I don't know. I was wondering if you could tell me. It's like, you don't know that you're doomed. You're never going to make it. I'm just like, okay, well, I mean, like, we're not doing this tomorrow, but, like, at some point in the future, like, we're going to do this. And so we're trying to, you know, like, I have some questions I'd like to ask. And, like, the quiz questions just kind of kept coming. Mm. But, like, after a while, this gentleman that I was speaking to on the phone just kind of, like, relented. That, like, I wasn't going to just be, like, I wasn't going to, like, start weeping on the phone and be like, you win, I won't start a comic shop. It was just, like, kind of then, like, got weirdly enthused about the idea of being able to impart some wisdom. And wow. that particular guy ended up, like, cracking open his QuickBooks on his laptop and just, like, literally, like, reading me, like, general ledger accounts and, like, balance sheet numbers from, like, years past or whatnot and, like, provided us, like, a ton of really good information. So, like I said, it was like kind of all over the board.
Do you think that was that guy's version of like, answer me these questions three?
It was like these questions 20, but yeah.
Information.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's so weird. Like Christine signed us up also for, Comics Pro, the, Comics Professional Retail Organization.
Sure, yeah.
And like, that's been great. Like all of those people have been super supportive and like, we've gotten great info. We got great info out of them early on.
And I actually found that through one of my my calls to comic book shop. And so I was doing my phone calls on my lunch break at work. Mm-hmm. And you know, I knew don't call on a Wednesday. That would be a terrible day to call the comic book shop. But I also, you know, had to intersperse it with different lunchtime activities, making sure I had a free day to be able to do it. So I ended up calling a shop on a Tuesday, and I called, and I'm like, hi, I'm from Lakewood, Ohio. My partners and I are opening a comic and game store. I just wonder if you had some time to answer a couple questions. And the guy on the phone said, you know, I don't have time right now. I'm not sure if you're aware, but Wednesday is a really big day in the comic book industry. So Tuesday is a bad day to do this phone call. And I was just like, oh, I did know that. And I'm, but I lost track of the days.
Of course,
yeah. And, you know, I felt like such a silly goose. And then, but he said, next week I'm going to be at the Comics Pro convention or whatever it is they do, their annual meeting.
Yeah.
And so can you call me back in 2 weeks and I will answer your questions.
Sure.
And so that I asked him, well, what is Comics Pro? And he told me, and then we ended the phone call so I could call him back in 2 weeks. But so I did the research on that, and that's how we found that organization.
That's awesome.
Luckily, they did answer my questions. I was able to recover from my Tuesday phone call faux pas.
Happens to the best of us.
I remembered a very small but funny thing from one of my calls. I think we were trying to, I don't remember why exactly, but I was asking like square footage on the store and maybe their rent. Like I don't remember why, but that was part of what we were asking about. And I remember the shop owner told me that information, but then said, but we have very tall ceilings. So remember that when calculating the price per square footage.
And I'm said, no carpenter.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if that applies.
So then I stopped asking that question after that. I was,
So we most certainly did not ask for the cubic yardage of anything or the cubic feet.
Yeah. No. How much water could I fill this store with?
What is your volume?
Right.
That's not what we mean by volume, sir.
How many back issues can I stack in this thing?
How high could I put my ROM collection?
Yeah.
So going into this, and having all these conversations with shop employees and shop owners and you know, the Comics Pro stuff. Is there anything that you guys went into looking at the comic industry and now you see in a completely different way? Or anything that has changed your perspective on comic shops in general or the way they operate or anything like that?
Okay, so I had no idea that there was only one publisher, distributor.
Oh, yeah, yeah, as far
so
as.
So that was like, yeah. wait, what? If we don't get the distributorship, like, that's the end all be all? Like, so for me, that was like kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle, and it's definitely something I want to cover on the show at one point, because it used to be so much different, as I'm sure you've learned through all the research. But yeah, I remember when we were kids, there were so many different distributors, and now it's the big one.
Yeah, that is a very good question, but yeah, I don't know that I had any, like, I feel like it was all new knowledge to me as far as like running, like the specifics of, yeah, ordering and everything like that. It seems like a very different beast than like a lot of other retail operations, I guess, which is what I'm used to. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel I'm kind of the outlier here, 'cause I had like kind of worked at a shop
for a while. Yeah.
So like I was familiar with like Final Cutoff and like some, I mean, it had been some time, but like, you know, how Diamond works to like on a very surface level. I'm trying to think like things that we've learned that are industry specific. I feel like we've gotten tons of good advice.
Cause it's an odd industry, the comic book, and like comic book shops and things, it's so much different than literally any other business I can think of.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's weird that it's like not been eaten into completely by digital in the way like a lot of other media has. I mean, and it's also weird to see like trends develop, like just like kids graphic novels and like YA graphic novels like becoming way more of a thing than they were, and like
it's, you know, a huge time for that right now.
I feel like we all grew up on the cusp of like manga becoming like a thing in shops, but like that's so far expanded to be
we got flashes of it, you know, when we were young and hitting those shops,
but. Like we all got like a bootlegged copy of Akira
at some point. Or somebody's brother's neighbor had, you know, Vampire Hunter D on VHS
tape.
Yeah.
Was two episodes cost $75.
And anyone that lived near a Blockbuster knew that was the best place to get anime, because they had nobody watched it at the time. So everything was like a $2 rental, too.
Yeah, totally. I feel like a lot of what I've learned has been more in the game space.
Okay.
But that's maybe worth mentioning, is like one of the reasons this has been like, I don't want to say doable, but like one of the things that has made this like an easier experience is like, Nick, Christine, and I have like pretty complementary skill sets. Like Nick has worked in like every aspect of retail, including like setting up new retail locations, and like Christine has some experience there too. But like not just in terms of like our professional experience, we all have kind of like, I don't want to like. Nick and Christine read comics, I read comics. Like, Nick plays games, I play games, Christine plays games. Like, we all have overlapping interests. But as far as, like, who knows more about which specific parts of which industry, we've, at least one of us has, like, been, like, kind of weirdly obsessed with that stuff for, like, a long time.
Sure, you've got your own, everybody's got their own G.I. Joe file card, like, strengths and weaknesses kind of going into this.
And so, like, Nick knew a lot more about, like, board game distribution and, like, release schedules than I did going into it. And even like, you know, like the organized play programs and stuff that Wizards of the Coast and Fantasy Flight and companies like that offer. So like for me, that was more of where my new knowledge came in. Like a lot of the comic stuff, it was just more like seeing surprising sales numbers and looking at ICV2 and being like, huh, weird. The one thing that has been like a real thing for me is like when I last was like employed in comics in any way, shape, or form, like Free Comic Book Day wasn't a thing yet.
Sure.
And so that is like a thing that I definitely had to learn a ton about.
Because for those that don't know, Free Comic Book Day is free for you, like, as a customer coming into the shop, but I think that's one thing a lot of people don't realize is the shops pay for those books.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not – it's a great idea and it's a great event and everything, but, yeah, it's nobody's out there just going, here's our books to give away for free, you know, like –
And figuring out, like, how much you spend on that or, like, how you promote it. And that was actually, like, what ended up in one of just, like, the best pieces of general small business, like, entrepreneurial advice I got is, I believe his name's Jeremy, the guy who owns Titan Comics in Dallas, who's on, like, the Comics Pro forum that they have if you're starting a new shop. I was like trying to ask questions about how to order for a free comic book day without asking questions because I didn't want to look like an idiot.
Of course.
And like this particular gentleman like realized exactly what I was going to try and do and was just like, hey, kid, like listen, like starting a small business is learning how to ask questions that you know are probably dumb questions, but like you just need the information. Like it doesn't care. You don't need anybody to like think you know what you're talking about or whatever.
Yeah.
And like I will say that's like a really good thing about Comics Bro is like it's a really supportive environment where you don't get people quizzing you about things.
Right.
You just get like a straight up, you know, hey, I don't know how this works.
Yeah.
And like no one's like, well, then you're gonna fail. They're like, oh, cool. Well, I have 20 years of industry knowledge. Let me dump it all on you right now and tell you about
like,
it.
Yeah, like, for instance, Elliot has actually one of the people from Comics Pro gave Elliot his phone number, so Elliot can just text him whenever. And so at one point we realized, oh my gosh, this was one of the iterations of financial projections. We did not consider shipping costs, freight.
On ordering like weekly books and things.
Right,
you mean?
Right.
Okay.
So we had this moment of crisis of like, how are we going to figure this out? So the Diamond website is unhelpful. It's their formulas are.
I mean, it's not shocking.
But
when you're the only,
we had to pull out a scientific calculator.
Yeah.
When you're the only game in town, you can kind of run things however you want. Like I think.
Yeah, it was kind of a black box situation. And so then we were like, okay, maybe the guy from Marco from Comics Pro will tell us. And so Elliot texted him and he's in California, but still it was a Saturday night. He texted back in like 10 minutes, was like, oh, yeah, my freight is like this. It's about this percentage of every order, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And we were just like, oh, well, that's what we needed. Okay.
See, comics, man.
Crisis averted.
That's what's great about comics is that sense of community. I mean, we've talked about it 100 times. And I know, you know, coming from punk rock shows and hardcore shows, we already know, you know, what it's like to have something like that. But it's nice to have sort of a bureau of people like that that are willing to help lift up everybody else that's kind of doing the same thing as you.
Yeah. So kind of to that, so Christina mentioned we at first were just reaching out to people in demographically similar areas outside of the state of Ohio. And part of that was because like we have relationships with a lot of people who own game and comic book stores here. Like there's the shop Nick and I kind of grew up at and like there are Carol and John's and Weird Realms and like stores that we love. And for a while, like, and this is something I think we would all probably agree that we would do differently if we were starting from scratch again, we kind of avoided talking to those people about it because we're like, we got to think of just the right way to do it because we're their competition now. And
right.
We don't want these people who we care about to like hate us forever when we're like, hey, you know how you.
Yeah. It's a legitimate concern, though, I think.
Totally. Like, I was terrified at talking, and I this was stupid of me to be worried because he's a good friend, but like our buddy who owns Ground Zero Comics, like I was terrified of telling him because like he's been a friend for 20 plus years at this point. So we were kind of not asking people in town directly, and then eventually we were just like, okay, we have to like start, like it got to a point where it was real enough that we're like, we have to tell these people we care about who are also
right before they find out when they see a store opening and you're behind the counter
and they're like, so hey
guess what we did.
But that is like really, like to your point about like comics kind of being a community, not kind of being a community where it's like, I would have never expected the people who run stores in Northeast Ohio, like, granted, they're not like in the same town we're in or whatever, but they're not too far
right,
away.
Right, of course, yeah.
Like,
Cleveland's only so big, I mean.
Yeah, I would not have expected everyone that we know who is already like in this industry in the area to have been as supportive as they have been. Like, everybody was willing to be like, here's all the information I have. Like, here's how, like, don't make these mistakes. Do this differently than I did it. Or, like, let me know when you need this piece of information, which is just was, like, kind of mind-blowing to be like, oh, like, a rising tide does lift all boats, and that's how you all view it, which is
right.
Great. And it's not this terrible cutthroat thing, which is, like,
yeah,
you know, was the concern.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's one of those things, too, where it's, like, it is, they are businesses, and everyone's obviously in it to bring home money and have a livelihood, but we're in it because we love art on some level and we love storytelling, and that's, you know, it's nice that it brings people together in that way.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think it's like in a lot of cases, a lot of these people just like they've learned so much and like they kind of do relish actually the opportunity to share everything that they've learned in some way, shape or form, you know, yeah. Like. But.
So where does Superscript sit as we record this? How far along / I guess how far away are you from an open store, I suppose, is the question.
Well, so things are pretty real at this point. This isn't going to air until our crowdfunding campaign goes live. So
sure, yeah.
I guess at that point in time, you'll know if we were wrong about any of this. We're wrapping up what we hope, knock on wood, our final lease is going to look like.
Okay.
So we're in negotiations there. We are, our financials are kind of all in line, like our investment in the company and then what money we're taking out in loans is pretty well secured at this point.
Sure.
So right now, once that lease gets secure, that would say we'll give it like a month before we're able to get access to our space. And during that time, we have some permitting and some things to do and finally being able to give like distributors like a real address and say like,
of
hey,
course,
this is where you
yeah.
ship the stuff when we order it. And that's kind of off to the races. So I think the goal from there is going to be to between March and April, get any renovations done that we need to get done and get all of our inventory in and set up and hopefully open before Free Comic Book Day. That's the plan.
Well, that's a great, you know, it's a great event and a great way to kick off what sounds like it's going to be a spectacular store.
Yeah. And you kind of touched on the crowdfunding campaign, but we are in the final stages of getting that ready. So we've filmed a video for it. That's the final touches are being put on that. We're really happy with it. Our friend Kevin filmed it, did an excellent job. And then we have secured or figured out our reward tiers. We've got some really great stuff that
That's
we
exciting.
Are offering. We'll be excited to talk about it in the next.
Yeah, there's going to be it'll get mentioned, but we are going to do a part two of this so we can see. Probably, I'm assuming we're going to record it in the store, which
that is
fun.
The plan. Yeah.
In the storefront, definitely swag. So we can mention that T-shirts, that sort of thing. But we'll be part of the reward tiers. But yeah, so that is something, and we will launch once we have the keys. You know,
yeah, of course.
When it can look real. You know, it's real to us, but
sure.
For someone who is helping us out through a crowdfunding campaign, you know, knowing that we have a space is
yeah,
makes it real.
That's
for them.
Pretty important, yeah, I would think.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this, like the crowdfunding campaign is live at this point in time, you know, whenever this goes up. And I don't know. I guess we'll just send you stuff for the show notes or whatever to
yeah,
like
we'll,
give a link
we'll,
to the.
What we'll do is record. We'll do record like a record of
okay.
a postscript kind of a thing with all the pertinent URLs and everything.
Right on.
Well, is there anything else you guys would like to add?
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, for guys. Having us. This is an exciting thing to get to be a part of on any level. So I'm grateful to be able to talk to you guys about it.
Yeah, it's great to be able to talk about it.
Like, I bet. Honestly, it's probably been killing you.
Yeah, it's. I mean, like, you know, with every passing month, like the window of people who know we're doing this kind of expands a little bit. Yeah. But
I mean,
like,
I've been telling everyone I know, so it's fine.
But yeah, it's.
Guess what I'm helping doing.
It's I mean, you are literally like, we couldn't do it without you. But
well, thank you.
It is nice to be able to like I mentioned, like we get together like a couple times a week, every week. Like there have been moments of this thing where it was like, holy shit, we're doing it. And like, this is real and it's going to work. And there have been other moments where it's just like, oh God, this is never going to work. We've made a colossal error. And
yeah, I've made a big mistake.
Yeah. And so like being kind of on the other side of a lot of that at this point, I mean, probably not all of it. We'll probably still have more moments where like it feels like things are shaky, but
it's a big undertaking. I mean, even if there's no way anyone can do something this big and not, and be fully confident 100% of the time. I don't think, I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I'd like to meet that person.
Right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And as a man with little confidence, I don't know anyone with that much confidence. That seems like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain degree of, like, you know, like I said, like, about the guy who kind of gave me a quiz when we called him or whatever. It's like, there are certain things where, like, people are super supportive and they bolster your spirits and they make you feel like you're actually going to pull this off. And then there are times where people, you know, really push back against whether or not,
maybe project a little bit.
Yeah, but and sometimes you need that too. Sometimes like you definitely need people to check your assumptions about how things are going to shake out. And I think that's like, if anything, for anybody's listening, this is like thinking about starting a business, or like that's the hardest part, is like when to listen to people telling you you're approaching something the wrong way, mm-hmm. and when to completely ignore them and just like have some faith in what you're doing is like, because there are times when both are important. But like I've talked about this like to you, Josh, before, like, but like I think we all have different levels of like risk aversion. And I think like I tend to be more averse to taking risks, which is like one of the reasons like I knew I would never do this totally by myself. Like there were two people to have involved. Is like everybody can be a little risk averse, but you have to have someone who's like, no, we can make that work.
Of course.
And it's not always going to be the same person. So we kind of take turns being, I feel like, the person who's like, no, trust me.
Yeah,
this is gonna. This going part of this thing is gonna work. Everyone having
kind of their suits of strength and
yeah, like that, and so. Like, and I think that's like the best part about doing this as a team, is just like it makes it bearable, because the things you doubt that you're gonna be able to pull off, you have someone else being like, "Don't worry about that. I've got that." You know.
Well, so, good.
Yeah,
it's a great way to approach things. I'm glad that everything seems to be going on track and seems to be going really well for what's gonna be certainly a great place to hang out. So. I think with that, this is a good way to close out the episode. So we'll be back with a part two with Elliot, Nick, and Christine. And we'll be recording from the shop that time. So it'll be a good time.
Looking forward to it.
Later, everybody.